Chapter 36. Little bed, vainly endeavoring to sleep. As he had been looking back amid the years of her short though varied past, and thinking of the threshold upon which she stood. Days and months had dimmed the form of Edward Springrove like the gauzes of a vanishing stage scene, but his dying voice could still be heard faintly behind. That a soft small chord in her still vibrated true to his memory, she would not admit. That she did not approach Manston with feelings which could by any stretch of words be called hymeneal, she calmly owned. Why do I marry him? ... she said to herself. Because Owen, dear Owen my brother, wishes me to marry him. Because Mr. Manston is, and has been, uniformly kind to Owen, and to me. C.T. in obedience to the dictates of common sense, Owen said, and dread the sharp sting of poverty. How many thousands of women like you marry every year for the same reason, to secure a home, and mere ordinary, material comforts, which after all go far to make life endurable, even if not supremely happy. 'Tis right, I suppose, for him to say that. Oh, if people only knew what a timidity and melancholy upon the subject of her future grows up in the heart of a friendless woman who is blown about like a reed shaken with the wind, as I am, they would not call this resignation of oneself by the name of scheming to get a husband. Scheme to marry? I'd rather scheme to die. I know I am not pleasing my heart. I know that, if I only were concerned, I should like risking a single future. But why should I please my useless self overmuch, when by doing otherwise I please those who are more valuable than I? ... In the midst of desultory reflections like these, which alternated with surmises, as to the inexplicable connection, that appeared to exist between her intended husband and Miss Aldclyffe, she heard dull noises outside the walls of the house, which she could not quite fancy to be caused by the wind. She seemed doomed to such disturbances at critical periods of her existence. It is strange, ... she pondered, that this my last night in Knapwater House should be disturbed precisely as my first was, no occurrence of the kind having intervened. ... As the minutes glided by the noise increased, sounding as if someone were beating the wall below her window with a bunch of switches. She would gladly have left her room, and gone to stay with one of the maids, but they were without doubt all asleep. The only person in the house likely to be awake, or who would have brains enough to comprehend her nervousness, was Miss Aldclyffe, but Cytherea never cared to go to Miss Aldclyffe's room, though she was always welcome there, and was often almost compelled to go against her will. The oft-repeated noise of switches grew heavier upon the wall, and was now intermingled with creaks, and a rattling like the rattling of dice. The wind blew stronger. There came first a snapping, then a crash, and some portion of the mystery was revealed. It was the breaking off and fall of a branch from one of the large trees outside. The smacking against the wall, and the intermediate rattling, ceased from that time. Well, it was the tree which had caused the noises. The unexplained matter was that neither of the trees ever touched the walls of the house during the highest wind, and that trees could not rattle like a man playing castanets or shaking dice. She thought, is it the intention of fate, that something connected with these noises, shall influence my future as in the last case of the kind? ... During the dilemma she fell into a troubled sleep, and dreamt that she was being whipped with dry bones suspended on strings, which rattled at every blow like those of a malefactor on a gibbet, that she shifted and shrank and avoided every blow, and they fell then upon the wall to which she was tied. She could not see the face of the executioner for his mask, but his form was like Manston's. Thank heaven! ... she said, when she awoke, and saw a faint light struggling through her blind. Now what were those noises? ... To settle that question seemed more to her than the event of the day. She pulled the blind aside and looked out. All was plain. The evening previous had closed in with a gray drizzle, borne upon the piercing air from the north, and now its effects were visible. The hoary drizzle still continued. But the trees and shrubs were laden with icicles to an extent such as he had never before witnessed. A shoot of the diameter of a pin's head was iced as thick as her finger. All the boughs in the park were bent almost to the earth with the immense weight of the glistening encumbrance. The walks were like a looking glass. Many boughs had snapped beneath their burden, and lay in heaps upon the icy grass. Opposite her eye, on the nearest tree, was a fresh yellow scar, showing where the branch that had terrified her had been splintered from the trunk. I never could have believed it possible, apostrophe she thought, surveying the bowed down branches, that trees would bend so far out of their true positions without breaking. Apostrophe, by watching a twig she could see a drop collect upon it from the hoary fog, sink to the lowest point, and there become coagulated as the others had done. Or that I could so exactly have imitated them, apostrophe she continued. On this morning I am to be married, unless this is a scheme of the Great Mother, to hinder a union of which she does not approve. Is it possible for my wedding to take place in the face of such weather as this? ? Two. Morning, her brother Owen was staying with Manston at the old house. Contrary to the opinion of the doctors, the wound had healed after the first surgical operation, and his leg was gradually acquiring strength, though he could only as yet get about on crutches, or ride, or be dragged in a chair. Miss Alcliffe had arranged that Cytherea should be married from Knapwater House, and not from her brother's lodgings at Budmouth, which was Cytherea's first idea. Owen, too, seemed to prefer the plan. The capricious old maid had latterly taken to the contemplation of the wedding with even greater warmth than had at first inspired her, and appeared determined to do everything in her power, consistent with her dignity, to render the adjuncts of the ceremony pleasing and complete. But the weather seemed in flat contradiction of the whole proceeding. At 8 o'clock the coachman crept up to the house almost upon his hands and knees, entered the kitchen, and stood with his back to the fire, panting from his exertions in pedestrianism. The kitchen was by far the pleasantest apartment in Knapwater House on such a morning as this. The vast fire was the center of the whole system, like a sun, and threw its warm rays upon the figures of the domestics, wheeling about it in true planetary style. A nervously feeble imitation of its flicker was continually attempted by a family of polished metallic utensils standing in rows and groups against the walls opposite, the whole collection of shines nearly annihilating the weak daylight from outside. A step further in, and the nostrils were greeted by the scent of green herbs just gathered, and the eye by the plump form of the cook, wholesome, white-aproned, and flowery-looking as edible as the food she manipulated, her movements being supported and assisted by her satellites, the kitchen and scullery maids. Minute recurrent sounds prevailed: the click of the smoke jack, the flap of the flames, and the light touches of the women's slippers upon the stone floor. The coachman hemmed, spread his feet more firmly upon the hearthstone, and looked hard at a small plate in the extreme corner of the dresser. No wedding this morning, that's my opinion. In fact, there can't be, apostrophe he said abruptly, as if the words were the mere torso of a many-membered thought that had existed complete in his head. The kitchen maid was toasting a slice of bread at the end of a very long toasting fork, which she held at arm's length towards the unapproachable fire, travestying the flanconade in fencing. Bad out of doors, isn't it? ? She said, with a look of commiseration for things in general. Bad? Not even a live soul, gentle or simple, can stand on level ground. As to jetting uphill to the church, 'tis perfect lunacy. And I speak of foot passengers. As to horses and carriage, 'tis murder to think of 'em. I am going to send straight as a line into the breakfast room, and say 'tis a closer. Hello, here's Clerk Cricket and John Day A. Coman. Now just look at 'em, and picture a wedding if you can. ? All eyes were turned to the window, from which the clerk and gardener were seen crossing the court, bowed and stooping like Bel and Nebo. You'll have to go, if it breaks all the horses' legs in the county, apostrophe said the cook, turning from the spectacle, knocking open the oven door with the tongs, glancing critically in, and slamming it together with a clang. Oh, why shall I? Apostrophe asked the coachman, including in his auditory by a glance the clerk and gardener who had just entered. Because Mr. Manston is in the business. Did you ever know him to give up for weather of any kind, or for any other mortal thing in heaven or earth? Apostrophe, mornin' so such as it is. Apostrophe, interrupted Mr. Cricket cheerily, coming forward to the blaze and warming one hand without looking at the fire. Apostrophe, Mr. Manston, guy up for anything in heaven or earth, did you say? You might ha cut it short by saying, oh, Miss Altcliffe, and leaven out heaven and earth as trifles. But it might be put off. Putting off a thing isn't getting rid of a thing, if that thing is a woman. Oh no. Apostrophe, the coachman and gardener now naturally subsided into secondaries. The cook went on rather sharply, as she dribbled milk into the exact center of a little crater of flour in a platter, it might be in this case. She's so indifferent. Apostrophe, dang my old sides. And so it might be. I have a bit of news. I thought there was something upon my tongue, but 'tis a secret. Not a word, mind, not a word. Why, Miss Hinton took a holiday yesterday. Apostrophe, yes? Apostrophe, inquired the cook, looking up with perplexed curiosity. Do you think that's all? Apostrophe, don't be so three cunning. If it is all, deliver you from the evil of raising a woman's expectations wrongfully. I'll skimmer your pate as sure as you cry amen. Apostrophe, well, it isn't all. When I got home last night, my wife said, Miss Adelaide took a holiday this morning, says she, my wife, that is, walked over to Nether Minton, met the Coman man, and got married. Says she. Apostrophe, got married. What, Lord a mercy, did Springrove come? Apostrophe, Springrove, no, Springrove's nothing to do. Why, it was Farmer Bollins. They've been playing bo peep for these 2 or 3 months seemingly. Whilst Master Teddy Springrove has been daddling, and talking, and spitting about having her, she's quietly left him all forsook. Serve him right. I don't blame the little woman a bit. Apostrophe, Farmer Bollins is old enough to be her father. Quite, and rich enough to be 10 fathers. They say he's so rich, that he has business in every bank, and measures his money in half-pint cups. Apostrophe, Lord, I wish it was me, don't I wish it was me? Apostrophe, said the scullery maid. Yes, 'twas as neat a bit of stitching as ever I heard of. Apostrophe, continued the clerk, with a fixed eye, as if he were watching the process from a distance. Not a soul knew anything about it, and my wife is the only one in our parish who knows it yet. Miss Hinton came back from the wedding, went to Mr. Manston, puffed herself out large, and said she was Mrs. Bollins, but that if he wished, as he had no objection, to keep on the house till the regular time of giving notice had expired, or till he could get another tenant. Apostrophe, just like her independence. Apostrophe, said the cook. Well, independent or no, she's Mrs. Bollins now. Ah, I shall never forget once, when I went by Farmer Bollins' garden years ago now years, when he was taking up Ashleftades. A merry feller I was at that time, a very merry feller, for it was before I took holy orders, and it didn't prick my conscience as told now. Armor, says I, little Tady seem to turn out small this year, don't them? Oh no, Cricket, says he, some be fair-sized. He's a dull man, Farmer Bollins, as he always was. However, that's neither here nor there. He's a married to a sharp woman, and if I don't make a mistake, she'll bring him a pretty good family, guy her time. Apostrophe, well, it don't matter. There's a providence in it, apostrophe, said the scullery maid. God Almighty always sends bread as well as children. apostrophe apostrophe, but is the bread to one house, and the children to another very often. However, I think I can see my Lady Hinton's reason for chosen yesterday to sickness or health it. Your young miss, and that one, had crossed one another's path in regard to young Master Springrove, and I expect that, when Addie Hinton found Miss Gray wasn't caring to have an, she thought she'd be beforehand with her old enemy in marrying somebody else too. That's maid's logic all over, and maid's malice likewise. Apostrophe apostrophe, women who are bad enough to divide against themselves under a man's partiality are good enough to instantly unite in a common cause against his attack. I'll just tell you one thing then, apostrophe said the cook, shaking out her words to the time of a whisk she was beating eggs with. Whatever maid's logic is, and maid's malice too, if Cytherea Gray even now knows that young Springrove is free again, she'll fling over the steward, as soon as look at him. Apostrophe apostrophe, no, no. Not now, apostrophe the coachman broke in like a moderator. There's honor in that maid, if ever there was in one. No Miss Hinton's tricks in her. She'll stick to Manston. Apostrophe, piff. Apostrophe apostrophe, don't let a word be said till the wedding is over, for heaven's sake, apostrophe the clerk continued. Miss Aldcliffe would fairly hang and quarter me, if my news broke off that they're wedding at a last minute like this. Apostrophe apostrophe, then you had better get your wife to bolt you in the closet for an hour or two, for you'll chatter it yourself to the whole boiling parish if she don't. 'Tis a poor womanly feller. Apostrophe, you shouldn't ha begun it, clerk. I knew how 'twould be, apostrophe said the gardener soothingly, in a whisper to the clerk's mangled remains. The clerk turned and smiled at the fire, and warmed his other hand. 3. Noon, the weather gave way. In half an hour there began a rapid thaw. By 10 o'clock the roads, though still dangerous, were practicable to the extent of the half mile required by the people of Knapwater Park. One mass of heavy leaden cloud spread over the whole sky, the air began to feel damp, and mild out of doors, though still cold and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.